Blog Talk Radio.
Who's watching your home when you're not there? It could be a burglar. Burglars prefer to break in when they think no one is home and no one will stop them. Don't be an easy target for intruders. Protect your home with a free security system monitored by ADT, the leader in home security. Pick up your phone now and get free hardware, free medical and fire alerts, and free activation. It's an $850 value. Just call Protect Your Home, your authorized ADT dealer, at 1-877-653-8844. You'll get 24-hour protection, and there's no cost for parts or activation. Call now about a free security system monitored by ADT. Call 1-877-653-8844. $99 installation charge, 36-month monitoring agreement at $35.99 per month. Call for terms and conditions to this offer and protect your home license numbers. Call now, 1-877-653-8844. That's 1-877-653-8844.
Blog Talk Radio.
I'll do whatever I can.
Well, welcome everyone to another great episode of Relationship Marketing 101 here on Blog Talk Radio. I am your host, Gina Gaudio-Graves, the Dean and Founder of DirectionsU.com. I'm calling you live this week from Niagara Falls, New York, as I do each week on Tuesdays at noon Eastern. And I've got my co-host, Rhonda DelBaccio, the Story Lady from ProfitableStorytelling.com on the air with us too. Hello, Rhonda.
Hey, Gina, I'll bet it's beautiful. I have never seen Niagara Falls. Oh, there goes the rooster.
It is gorgeous, and it is so cool to be driving down the road, and from miles and miles away, you see something that you think is a forest fire. And the first time I saw that, I'm like, what the heck is all that smoke? That must be a huge fire. Only to realize when I got up close that it is not indeed fire. It is mist. It is just water, and that's
wow.
The power of Niagara Falls. You can see it from probably 5 to 10 miles away. That's how much mist is in the air from the power of all that water.
That's called leverage, Gina, right?
That it is, isn't it?
Yeah,
it
absolutely.
Really is.
That's the first thing that comes to mind. I guess everything is a business lesson sometimes, but yeah. I mean, it really is true when you can do what you're doing and there's just all this mist, all this extra stuff that happens just by you being you, that's perfect.
Absolutely. And you're right. It's a gorgeous time of the year to be up in Niagara Falls. The leaves are just starting to change, yet it's still a decent temperature, you know, in the low 70s kind of thing. We had a little bit of rain last night and this morning, but for the rest of the week it should be really nice, so great time to be up here. And I'm looking forward to this Friday night. I got together with my good friends Doug and Cherry Champagnier on Sunday night, and we all went out to dinner with Rick Benetow from 10 Million Clicks for Peace and his girlfriend Jen because it was Rick's 55th birthday. Mm-hmm. And on Friday this week, we are going to have a little get-together for all of my Canadian friends and all of my friends from this area. So I'm really looking forward to that. I should get to see a really good crowd, including the very first challenge, John Cousins. That
mm-hmm.
should be nice.
That's
one of my
great
bachelor students, Scott Kowalski.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully one of my coach, Sophie Vecchita. So it should be a fun night.
So it's going to be a G-cubed meetup over there, huh?
There you go. Isn't that cool?
Yeah. Wow, that is absolutely awesome and fantastic. It's great. And I'll be down at JV Alert Live in San Diego. And I've already told Sohail that I'm going to be learning cool stuff from him in terms of the JV University, which I'm a part of, and looking forward to learning what I can from him while we're both out there and assisting him in ways that I can with his project and getting him to write his book. So that'll be an awesome time.
Fantastic. And next week, Sahail and I are going down to South Carolina to spend about a week or so with David Preston and his wife Susan, the legendary consultant and offline cash cow guru himself, so that should be kind of neat too.
I'd love to be a fly on the wall there. That'll be a great time. Excellent.
Oh, it is. It's going to be fun.
Absolutely.
So
that's very cool.
I hear we've got some good stuff to talk about today, Ms. Rhonda.
I knew I have something else that's near and dear to your heart and that I really think is a positive and powerful solution and a new paradigm that a lot of, I think, businesses and other people could adopt that would make a huge impact on the world and in getting out of the former mindset and into this whole idea with social entrepreneurship.
Awesome and topic. You're right. Something very, very, very near and dear to my heart.
And we had the World International Day of Peace, the International Day of Peace yesterday, and you've been working diligently with 10 million clicks for peace. I've been doing some things. I've just written my book. In fact, I sent over to Rick and Julian a couple of videos and an audio with different things about their mini book program that we heard about last week on the show.
And they are so excited about that video. I haven't seen it personally, but boy, they're raving about it.
Oh, cool. Well, I'll have to send you the links, Gina. I will do that. So, I mean, really, as I thought about it being so close to the International Day of Peace and knowing all that you've done with 10 million clicks, and you are definitely, we have a truck going by. Sorry about that noise. But we have a, you have a lot to say and a lot of experience in social entrepreneurship. And so let's kind of talk about what that is and how it looks like, how it looks in reality. And then also want to kind of tie it back to the typical way things are done in the world of grants and scrapping for funding and different things and show how this is a true solution and a powerful leverage.
That sounds like a great idea. So let's start by talking about what social entrepreneurship really is. So what do you mean when you talk about social entrepreneurship, Ms. Rhonda?
Well, when I talk about social entrepreneurship, I think about ways that entrepreneurs can do activities that will provide funding or resources for a social cause of something that you really care about. I mean, I care very much about peace. I care very much about animals. And so coming together in ways that are profitable for the organization and for the business. So I'm sure there's a really cool, better definition that you have, but that's what comes to mind for me.
That's a great definition. And notice that there was one huge word that you said in there, and that is for profit. The concept of social entrepreneurship is one that is very much for profit. Most people, when they hear me start talking about social entrepreneurship, immediately think that what we're talking about is setting up a 501c3 charitable organization of some sort that can make a difference. And that is not what social entrepreneurship is all about. Social entrepreneurship is about taking businesses that are very much for profit and setting them up in a way that can also make a difference. So that they're no longer businesses that simply worry about making money. That's not enough for these businesses. For these businesses, by definition, they are making money by making a difference. And by making a difference, they end up making even more money. That's the cool thing about social entrepreneurship. And you're right. The concept of leverage comes in a big way when you're dealing with social entrepreneurship. Because you're leveraging the making a difference piece to really make even more money in the end. So that's what the topic is about. Now, how does that play out in reality? Well, there are so many different ways of building a business. So if there are that many different ways of building a business, there are also that many more ways of making a difference. And it's a matter of combining the two things. You often hear me talk about the topic of blue ocean markets. And let me just talk about that for a second because it applies here with social entrepreneurship, and I'll tie the two thoughts together in a second. Blue Ocean Strategy. There's a book by the name of The Blue Ocean Strategy. I always butcher the author's name. It's something like René Malbourne or something like that. It's a French name that I have a hard time pronouncing. It is a brilliant book. It says that all markets can be classified in a couple of different ways. There are red ocean markets. There are blue ocean markets. A red ocean market is a market like self-improvement or internet marketing today. There is so much competition that the suppliers have kind of become like sharks. There's a little feeding frenzy going on. And as they're competing with one another, the only way they're able to compete is by dropping their prices. The more that the prices...
You've got a bloody ocean.
Precisely. The more that the prices drop, the more the quality diminishes because they can't afford to keep the quality without making any money. And as the quality drops, now you've got a true market correction that takes place, and even the demand starts drying up as well. And this book says you don't want to touch a market like that. It's a big no-no. You're not going to make any money in it. You're just going to add to the problem. It says what you want to do is to instead go out and create a blue ocean market. Now, a blue ocean market is one that does not exist right now. It is created by bringing a value-added innovation into a product and doing it in such a way as to create an entirely new market for yourself. Now, the example that they use in the book is Cirque du Soleil. Cirque du Soleil could have gone into the circus-going market when they first got started. Very red ocean. Circuses were closing left and right. The prices were dropping. The quality was awful, and people were going bankrupt. They could also have gone into the theater market. Again, very red ocean. There were all kinds of theaters closing up because the ticket prices had dropped so much that they couldn't even afford to put on their production. Instead of doing either of those things, what did Cirque du Soleil do? Well, they went and brought the value-added proposition of a theatrical performance into a circus. And in creating this new type of product, they created an entirely new market for themselves out of circus-going theater lovers. Now, let me bring this back to social entrepreneurship. So go ahead.
No, I'm sorry. I was just thinking of another example, too, is the group that's called Brulé. And they are a contemporary Native American music group. In fact, they are responsible for putting on the map and into the award ceremonies even the category of contemporary Native American music. So what
I know the group, really good idea. Yeah. That is an example, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is, because if we just want to be another music group for the youth in particular to appreciate, well, there's already tons of those, and I know plenty of starving musicians, and, you know, they could have done that, and they could have just stayed with the traditional music, which the very traditional stuff, there are some of the old-timers like it, and maybe a few of the young people do, but it's just that wasn't going to serve them, even though it would have kept the culture alive. It wouldn't have actually brought it into the next generation and the seven generations to come. So what they did then was to have the traditional Native American music, but with a modern flair and adding some new music, some new instrumentation and things. And they brought this dance and storytelling and music all together, and now they're keeping the culture alive and reinventing Native American music at the same time.
Really great idea and really good example. So the whole thing really applies to social entrepreneurship as well. With social entrepreneurship, that's really what you're doing. You're marrying the idea of making a difference with the idea of building a for-profit business. So let's use the 10 million clicks, the 10 million books project, the Messengers of Peace books, as an example of how you do this. Last week on the show, I had asked Rick, so how could someone in the golf niche, for example, use the whole Messengers of Peace books project? Would that work? Why would they want to do that? And that's a good example of social entrepreneurship. So So anybody can go out and write a book about golf, how to improve your golf swing, how to improve your stance, how to improve your backswing. There are so many different topics you could write about in golf, right? Well, if you're using a blue ocean strategy, you're going to combine two things. You're going to bring the value-added innovation of peace into a book about golf. So that instead of it just becoming how to improve your golf swing, the book can be why you want to improve your golf swing, so that you're really talking about peace or how golf can improve peace in your life, how golf could improve peace in your community, that kind of thing. Right. And if you're writing one of these Messengers of Peace mini books on that topic, you want to set it up in a way that it makes a difference in terms of both creating peace for the reader as well as making a difference for the world. So maybe you give, 10 cents per book sale to charity, or maybe you use some of the proceeds of these mini books to build a shelter that can allow peace to happen where there is a big golf course or something like that. And in doing that, now you've created a blue ocean for yourself. Now you will have the opportunity to have one of these Messengers of Peace mini books used as a lead generator for all of the other pure golf-related products that you sell. But people will be attracted to that peace book even more than they would a book on Improve Your Golf Swing. It's not the same old, same old. It's now something really unique. And your business is set up very much for profit, but it makes a difference all at the same time.
Yeah, and that's actually, obviously that was what I had on my mind too, because I'm using part of the proceeds from this book for 10 million clicks, and as part of my intention for the book, I really wanted to give the people a sense, and mine is about storytelling. And if you just write any old book about peace or any old book about storytelling, this kind of combines them in a way that's a little bit different and that's profitable and will help the organization. Also, I wanted to get the idea across that everyone has a story that needs to be shared. And when Rick called me last week after he read it, I had tears in my eyes because I felt like with what he said, I realized I had hit the mark exactly, because if even one person realizes, and what he had said to me was, this is a great piece also to show people that anyone can create a mini book. And I went, perfect. That was really part of my intent. I was just very, very happy with that.
That's awesome. And it is so true. Even a child could create a mini book. We're not talking about having to write War and Peace here. We're talking about a 32-page mini book, which is about, what, 6 pages in word or something like that?
Yeah, about 6 pages. No big deal.
I could bang that out in under an hour if I wanted to. No,
oh,
I want
sure,
to go back and edit it and whatnot and make it, really solid. But it can be done very, very quickly with very little effort. And it's something that is not cost prohibitive. I mean, so many people look at the idea of writing a book and getting a publisher, and then they look at the idea of either self-publishing or vanity press, and it can get really expensive, and before you know it, you set out to build this business that's a for-profit business, and you're more than 10 grand in the hole. It's not that kind of thing. We're talking a couple $100. But when you've got that tie-in to something that makes a difference, and you use this as a tool, and I'm sure you're already planning on doing some of this, Rhonda, but things like take your mini book and have it become your business card. You don't just pass out a little paper card. You pass out a little mini book. And you tell people, hey, here's my mini book. My contact info is on the card inside of it. And when you're done reading it, please pass it on. And you can create something like Pay It Forward, where you tell every person you give one of these mini books to, I want you to do me a favor. I will give this to you. But in return, I want you to give this to 3 people. Will you agree right now that if I give this to you, you will commit to giving it to 3 more people? Well, now you've got something that kind of takes a viral life of its own on, And it becomes this huge viral thing. If you've ever seen the movie Pay It Forward, the little boy in the movie who came up with the idea of making a difference for three people started diagramming it out. And if he only made a difference for three people, who only made a difference for three people, who only made a difference for three people, it only takes a few levels of doing that before you're all of a sudden at a million or more people. And the same
right.
exact thing could happen with one of these books being used in a way that really passes it on. And the neat thing about these books is they're actually created in a way that it's meant to be passed on. You can actually
right.
track the pass-along effect, which changes everything right there.
Yeah.
So
that
what are
really
some
does.
Other examples of businesses that are what we would call social entrepreneurial businesses, Rhonda?
Let's see. Well, I mean, a lot of the way that you set things up where you have your blogging for peace.
Mm-hmm.
And,
so I took the idea of blogging. I took stuff
yeah.
that I do for profit every day of the
right.
week. I took courses that I sell every day of the week.
Right.
And instead of just going out and continuing to sell it, I am giving the course away to other peace organizations so that they can use my material and my blogging system to be able to grow their peace organization. And I'm hoping that if I help them to grow their peace organizations and they're out making a difference, that it will allow me, by osmosis, to make a difference as well. I'm
right.
doing the same thing with another project called Higher Power Marketers. It's not something that's completely off the ground yet, but it will be within the next 12 months, that is very similar. Again, I'm taking all of my for-profit courses, and I'm making them available to ministers who are also marketers for free. Ministers don't have that kind of money. Really? Wow, I didn't even realize anybody else was doing that yet.
No, he's not doing it, but I said he needs it. He is
awesome.
He's written a book, and I've kind of helped him, you know, as far as making sure that it's entrepreneurially sound and all of those kinds of things. His book is coming out soon, and he knows he needs the marketing aspects. And, I mean, for right now, I certainly can tell him about the 30-day challenge, but I know that he will love this higher power marketing because it will help him and others get the marketing training they need without having to pay for the higher levels of mentoring that could really help them put everything into action. I mean, they will at least get some of that learning. So that's going to be fantastic.
And in a very short period of time, without much effort, I was able to identify more than 2,000 ministers who are also marketers. I imagine
mm-hmm.
that if I went out and really researched it, that I would find thousands and thousands and thousands of ministers who are also marketers. They're not out marketing
mm-hmm.
their cause. They're out writing books and creating products because they don't get paid enough and they need to support themselves from something. So they're out trying to find a way to make money so that they can then support their cause. And if I then give them my stuff that is very much for profit, now how can I use that to get leverage to make even more money? Well, what I'm going to do is I'm going to go and give this to these ministers. I'm going to give it freely with no expectations in return. But I'm going to
uh-huh.
ask each one of them to invite their congregations to come on the journey with them so that while they're going through my courses, their congregations can go through my courses as well. And if they are successful in their endeavors and they go back to their congregations and say, hey, folks, see that new building right there? That came from the money that I made in my business, and I learned how to do it
right.
from Gina. How much more likely is their congregation going to be to want to take apart from my course? A lot more, I would say.
Exactly. And if those ministers, if any of them should want to write a book which would help them get their message out, that's something where, you know, where I can be of value to them. And other people that are in business or having a message need to have a book. And, you know, there are all these great ways where why not? Let's everybody have as much leverage as possible. bring in profits, change lives, but we don't have to do it in this only giving it away. There's nothing at all wrong with creating profit streams for people.
Exactly. And there's nothing wrong with setting up a business that expects to make money while it's making a difference. But you don't have to have a 501c3 and rely solely on donations to make a difference.
Mm-hmm.
I got a fortune last night. I ate at an Asian restaurant in the Seneca Hotel here in Niagara Falls, and I got to get my fortune out and read it because I was thinking about it last night when I got the fortune, and I went, oh, I got to mention this on the show. And here's what it says. It says, the greatest of all mistakes is to do nothing because you think you can only do a little. Let me read that again. The greatest of all mistakes is to do nothing because you think you can only do a little. And what I see often is people who say, well, I'm not going to worry about making a difference in my business because I'm just one person and, you know, what can I do? I'm just going to go make money instead. Well, here's the thing. I don't care if you're only one person. If you touch just one other person and get that one person to touch one other person and that person to touch one other person, you are making a huge impact already just through the pass-along effect. And if you can set your business up in a way that it is very intentional that that happens, you actually build your systems around it. You do your marketing around it, and you cause that to happen. Now, even your little baby bit that you can do really, really, really has an impact. Very real.
Yeah, it really does. And if you can take your one little bit, like one teaching that you have, and leverage it into the lives of other people through just starting with a few and then passing it along, it doesn't, you don't have to have any huge system. You don't have to have, you know, all these different products and whatever, like Gina, like you have or whatever, but just to have any core message that's important to you and to get that out while you're also doing business and making a profit and making also some profit for an organization, spreading a message, you know, why not? And here's what happens in the world of nonprofits, not-for-profits, charitable organizations all over the world. They rely on funding from governments and grants. And so what happens is it creates, to me, that's the ultimate red ocean because everybody is scrapping for the same few dollars. Everybody wants their proposal to win or their organization to be chosen. And it ends up creating the biggest scarcity mentality of the world because you end up with this feeling of, well, if this company is only giving out $100,000 a year to two organizations and there's 50 that are vying for it, we better get ours. And it just, to me, gets into an area that it's just not very helpful or productive, whereas the social entrepreneurship model is much more open and empowering to people. Wouldn't you say?
I would definitely agree. And especially the empowering part, because I think we're at a point in time where society as a whole isn't good with the idea of doing things in a way that it's just me, 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 me. I think society as a whole has started to shift, and that they really do want to do something that makes a difference, but they don't always know how. If you can be the influencer in your market to show them how, now they're really going to be forever in your debt. And because they really feel like they owe you one, the idea of reciprocity kicks in, and they're going to want to come and do business with you even more. And I don't care what kind of business you're in, that applies to all of them. I mean, you can do that in golf, you can do that in crafts, you can do that in the cooking markets. It applies equally to all of them. We just need to really sit down and think about it at some point so that we can do it in a way that will still make us money. You don't need to go out and give everything away. You can do it in a way that really makes you money too. What's some other business or social entrepreneurship examples? trying to come up with one off the top of my head. Now, I know so many of them, and I cannot think of one. I'm just drawing a blank because I'm forcing myself.
Probably. I know of, you know, that there must be a lot of it going on. I know of a lot of businesses that have sort of a charitable branch or whatever. I was trying to think of a bricks and mortar business example.
I know one. There's a commercial on, and this commercial has Tom the Shoe Giver in it. Have you seen that commercial?
No.
I can't remember the name of the shoe company. It's a shoe company, and what this company does is they sell shoes, right? But what
right.
they tell their buyers is, wear these shoes, use these shoes. For every pair that you buy, we will donate a pair overseas. When you're done using these shoes, come and bring them back in, and we will give you a discount on your next pair of shoes. And we will take the shoes that you've turned back in, refurbish them, and give those away, too.
Wow.
And it is a really neat concept. And so this guy's role in the company is that he is the chief shoe giver. He goes out and finds the people who need shoes that they are going
wow.
to give shoes away to. Now, if you could buy a pair of shoes for yourself and know that at the same time you're going to put shoes on some little girl in a third world country versus you could buy shoes for yourself, which company are you going to buy shoes from if they're all the same place and everything else is equal?
All else being equal, why wouldn't you go where you can give? Yeah, that's awesome.
Right? And that's what the commercial is all about.
That is amazing. I'm going to just look up and find out what that is. That's awesome. That's the kind of example I was looking for, or, you know, trying to think through in a bricks and mortar business, but I hadn't really come up with one, so that's excellent.
And if you think about the marketing implications of it, so they're going to give you a discount on your next pair of shoes when you bring the pair back that you've just worn. And
uh-huh.
if they can refurbish them, they will. Well, now you've just set yourself up for a way to make a difference and at the same time get people to buy from you over and over and over and over and over again. Why not buy all your shoes from these guys so when you want new ones, you just go trade them in, get a discount, and buy the next pair? Your customers for life, you're not customers once. Oh, what company is it, please? I can't remember the name of it.
Tom's Shoes.com.
Thank you.
Tom's Shoes, TOMSSHOES, Tom's Shoes.com. And their shoes are just like, I mean, they're not, you know, weird, funky, strange things.
No, they're really cool-looking shoes.
Yeah, they're awesome. And if I had one here, I'd be shopping there for sure. It'd be great. I mean, it is
very
awesome.
Reasonable price shoes, too.
Right. Yeah, they're not like a $300 designer shoes that nobody could afford doing that or whatever. They're just kind of your types of shoes that you would want to wear. They look really cool, different styles and everything. And, yeah, I mean, absolutely. So that's an awesome example. So why can't everybody be profitable? I don't know. It's like, where did somebody have this agreement that if we're doing charity, we have to give everything away, only accept money if it directly goes into a charity and not take anything more than what's necessary or whatever. I mean, why not everyone be profitable and everybody change the world? It's also much more empowering because then you're not relying on a charity to be your source of giving when you can create that within your own business.
Yes. In one of the apprentice groups, they were talking about doing a group project that would have had them setting up a pecan pie business. And if I think about the pecan pie business, the whole concept of social entrepreneurship can apply there as well, right? So if they've got
right.
a pecan pie business, they set up distribution and whatnot. I'm trying to remember the name of the movie. There's a movie out recently that had a company in it that was really failing. And
New in Town.
Say that again?
It's New in Town. I just saw it the other day.
New in Town. Thank you. Yep, that's the one.
Oh, I love that movie.
And the butter company was really failing, and this woman goes in, and she's sent in from corporate to close this butter company down. And they're a company that's up in Minnesota, and it's literally the only industry in town, and everybody looks at her as a bad guy because she's got to put the entire town out of work. Well,
right.
I started thinking about that with this pecan pie example, because if you could find a business like that that is failing and bring a new recipe in that you can use their factory to produce, now you can take this business and completely turn it around. But let's add the social entrepreneurship part to it. So maybe instead of charging $5 for your pecan pie, you charge $7 or $8 for your pecan pie. But for every single pie you sell, you give a pie away to a homeless shelter or to somebody in a third world country or somebody that really needs food. Now, you're making more money per sale anyway. It more than covers your cost, and in the end, it will probably put a lot more profit in your pocket. Number one, you're selling more pies. Number two, you're making more money on each one. So even if you're giving a little bit of the extra sales away, who cares?
I'm sorry, Gina, I'm kind of laughing because when I mentioned to somebody that I'm tying my book in with 10 million clicks, they're like, oh, you're just trying to sell more books. And I went, yeah, I am. So what's wrong with that? The organization's still profiting.
So what is wrong with that?
I said, yeah, and? And they were like, well, and you said that like five times. Well, you're just trying to sell more of your books, plain and simple. I said, and what happens when I sell more books with regards to 10 million clicks? Well, it was like one of those. They just,
there's no comeback for them.
No. Well, they make more money. Ooh, I'm such a narcissist.
No comeback for that. So what? If your book really is going to make a difference for people, and you get it up into that many more hands, so what?
Yeah, exactly. So what? So I sell a million books. They make plenty of money, and I do too. What's wrong with that?
Yeah. So what? That's a great, great, great example, Rhonda.
Oh, that was so funny. It just cracked me up.
And I think not enough people really think about the whole concept of social entrepreneurship. If we had more people really understanding that it's okay to make money and that you can make a difference at the same time, I totally believe that we would solve the world's hunger problems, the issue of not having enough potable water for people. Even World Bank is totally solvable from the concept of social entrepreneurship if people intentionally set their companies up like this.
Absolutely. It's just like this whole thing with charity somehow came into just giving stuff away and that making money is evil, whatever. And it's not at all true, but that is kind of stuck into people's heads where it's not all right, that money is somehow bad. And I'm like, well, no, it's just an exchange of energy. There's nothing that's bad about it. It's like anything else that can be used in any number of different ways. And so that's the important thing to think about. Everybody in your business really can engage this whole idea of social entrepreneurship, can't you?
You really can. If you don't have money,
ooh,
where'd that echo come from?
Oh, I don't know. I didn't
hear it. Oh, it finally went away. I think it's still there a little bit, but not too bad. If you don't have money, you're going to be spending so much time just trying to take care of yourself that you're not going to be able to make a difference for anybody else. By making money, you can make a bigger difference. And if you can make even more of it because you made a difference in the first place, so you kind of had to tie the two things together like the blue ocean, then mm-hmm. you can make an even bigger difference still. If you're really setting your business up in a way that makes a difference and makes money, think about the legacy you're leaving for your life. You will be remembered for sure when you're gone. And you'll be remembered for things you can really be proud of. You don't have to be rich to have a legacy of your own. You don't have to go endow some foundation or build a wing on some university or college. Yeah, that's okay. There's nothing wrong with doing that if you have billions of dollars. But why not be in a position where by making a difference, by doing things that really do make a difference, causes you to make even more money to start with. To me, that's the beautiful thing about it.
Yeah, I definitely agree. So, Gina, let's kind of turn this to giving some ideas for folks who go, okay, I'm kind of sold that this is a cool idea. I'd like to implement it in my business. So let's talk about some ways that people can start figuring out what's the best way to get started.
Like anything else you're going to do in your business, you've got to approach it strategically. And as you've heard me say over and over and over again, that means that you've got to start with the end in mind, right? Oh, Rhonda, I hate to do this, but I've got an urgent call coming in. I've got to take it. You're going to have to take the show for 2 minutes. I'll be right back.
No problem. I will do that. So, yeah, Gina's right, and I knew that's what she was going to say. It's the nice thing about knowing each other really well. Yes, it's starting strategically, and with anything else.
Sorry about that.
Oh, you're back so soon.
It was my doctor's office confirming my appointment.
Okay. You thought it was going to be something else.
I thought it was like something urgent. They don't normally call me. Anyway.
Okay.
So if we start back on where I was going, how do you get started with social entrepreneurship? Like any other aspect of your business, you've got to be strategic. And with social entrepreneurship, it's even more important that you start with the end in mind to figure out what your first step should be. So your first step is really that end result, and that is outlining where you want to go. How do you want to make a difference through this business? How much money do you want to make in the process? And what other goals do you want to be putting in place for yourself? And you want to think about, I guess you'd say, two sets of goals. What are the goals that you personally want to achieve? But then what other goals do you want someone else to be able to achieve because of this business? And this is a tough concept for some people to wrap their heads around when they're first getting started. I have a student in the bachelor's program that I recently did a strategy session with. And we were looking at what their goals were, and they were so pleased because it's a husband and wife team, because they had outlined all of their goals. And I said, great, read them to me. And the goals were very matter of fact. They were, I want to make X amount of money. I want to lose weight. I want to, you know, go to this city. And they were all me, 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 me. And when I asked the question of, that's awesome, but how will this business impact your customers and your prospects, and what difference will it make for them? What goals will they be able to achieve because of it? They went, huh? And they didn't get it. And it's because we're taught from an early age that that's not the way it's done, right? Nobody talks about social entrepreneurship in school today. And I'm saying is that you've got to do it on purpose. If you don't plan out how you're going to change someone's life, you're not going to change anyone's life, much less your own.
Mm-hmm.
So start there and allow that to dictate what you do to create this business. And as you start looking at those long-term goals, where you want to be in 3 to 5 years and where you want to cause other people to be in 3 to 5 years, now you can start looking at ways of combining all of those goals into one business. It's easy to predict how much money you're going to make in your business. If you want to make $1 million, you just got to figure out what that means. What are you going to sell? What's the price point of what you're going to sell? How many units of it do you need to sell? And when you know that number, easy. okay, so let's go make money. But it's bigger than that. It's not enough to just know the monetary aspects. You've got to be able to look at other parts and other goals to figure out how it all gets combined. I imagine for a company like Tom's Shoes that they started with a goal of wanting to put shoes on X number of people in the world. They'd have to, or they'd never have come up with the idea that they have. It wouldn't have worked. So you've got to come up with some of those ideas. You hear Ben Mack often talk about bringing potable drinking water to every human being on this planet. And that's his end result. That's his outcome. So in building his business, that's something that he looks at continuously. What is it that he can do to help bring potable water to every human being on the planet without just going out and buying a bunch of water? Because it's not about buying a bunch of water. You've got to build it into the overall strategic plan. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And even thinking about my messenger book, The Peace Seed, the idea, it gets across my core message that stories are the glue that connects everyone in humanity of every walk of life. And in empowering at least 1 million people to share your story and connect and listen to other people's stories, that gets my message across. It helps the Peace Organization and any other or whatever that I can also get to distribute those books and that message will be a part of all of that.
Absolutely. So what kind of goals do you have with your business, Rhonda, and with the Peace Book, both for yourself and for other people?
Well, the goals for my business include showing at least 1 million people the power of their stories, to connect them with others, and to, because in sharing that story, it allows you to stand in your own power. And in listening to the story of other people, it allows you to understand somebody else's different way of life. So that is of core importance to me at all times. It's behind anything else that I do, is this whole notion of connecting through stories. Because how can you want to bomb somebody if you have experienced, either heard or read, a story of somebody's life or why something is the way it is over there or whatever? You can't possibly. So that's in the backdrop of everything that I do, and I say at least 1 million people because I want it to, it will get to the point where that happens, and then the goal will be raised. But starting with that, one of the ways to accomplish that is through the mini book that I have. Part of it is in the way that I teach people to write books. It's about sharing stories and reaching people through stories, which emotionally connect you with other people. And in emotionally connecting with your ideal customer, your ideal reader, not only does that get your message across, whatever it is that you're teaching them at that moment, but it empowers them to make the types of changes that they might want in their life or to have understandings for their own life and or business, depending on the markets that you're in. And it also is a way for them to connect with you as a person, because stories are an emotional connecting point. They connect you by the heart. So
that's
a good story. Yeah, these stories do connect you heart to heart. Information or facts do not sell. It's the stories, the emotion that sells, and the emotion is carried in stories. So, and that's true in a blog post, it's true in an article, it's true in a book, it's true in your little 32-page mini book. If you write poetry or whatever, that the same idea is behind all of that, and the same power is behind all of that, which is the human connection that happens heart to heart as you share stories.
And
so,
how will this business make a difference for other people?
Because they are going to be able to connect with their community, with their ideal audience, for business folks, just for people in general, being able to share and receive stories. It connects them with other people. See, my goal isn't all about just though that if they'll connect with me or whatever, but it's that in sharing that, they connect with whoever they need to connect with, with their ideal customer, with family members, with people that they contact.
That is really cool. And how will you achieve that?
How I achieve that is through the particular products and services that I have. And so that's, you know, that's my big goal, the products that I have, including the instant credibility system for teaching people to write a book, which you can find at instantcredibilitybook.com/Gina, is what shows people how you can write a book and attract more customers, media attention, prospects, all of that through your book. And, of course, telling your story is an integral part of every single chapter of your book. So that's a piece of that teaching. It's how that teaching gets inside of a product, and you don't really know the deeper or spiritual aspect of that necessarily from reading that product, but you're going to get it anyway slipped in there. And if you're telling better stories, you're connecting better with other human beings. So that's just one example. But inside of that product, even in the way that I work with authors and help them connect with people that have strategic alliance partners, you know, the idea really is always connecting with people on a human level. So that teaching becomes a part of the way that I provide service. And the way that I, it doesn't matter what I'm doing, if it's the product that is instant credibility, that's how to write a book that grows your business, whether it's the book, The Peace Seed, even the first book I did, I'll Push, You Steer, 3 years back. And that book is full of stories, and people read the thing over and over, and they connect with us because they're all stories from myself and my co-author about things that have happened in our life. So, Gina, does that give you you know, an idea of what that really looks like and how that comes across in my business?
I think so. And if your one of your goals is to connect with a million people to show them the power of stories, then you want to make sure that you've got an element in place that can guarantee that you're going to reach a million people with that message. So tell us about the mechanism you've got in place to allow you to do that. I think I know what it is, but I just want everyone else to as well.
Well, the mechanism that I have in place really starts with that peace seed, the peace seed, that book, that gives the core essence of the teaching that I share in everything that I do in my business. That is being shared as a also funds going to 10 million clicks for peace. And then one thing I'm looking to do is to hook up with organizations or companies where they can buy large lots and distribute it so that that message also is helped in spreading. And, of course, I am, yes, I'm profiting. Yes, I'm selling more books. Woohoo! And 10 million clicks is also making more profit because I'm selling more books.
Now, doesn't the Messenger book series automatically have an element in it that can help you get to the million people?
Absolutely. It has elements inside of it simply because of the pass-along technology inside of the book. And I also lead people to a website, which I don't have constructed quite yet because I'm still, of course, in the process of getting it all together. But it will be a blog. There will be the products that I have and so forth will be a part of that. But the point is to build the relationship. And there's a call to action in the book, which really entices people to say what they feel called to do now that they have read the book. And that's going to be a little secret piece at the end, or a little special piece at the end of the actual book that drives them into that site.
And so one of the things that I would probably do is I would go so far as to have a little message in the book or on the portal or a combination of places that intentionally asks each person to pass that book to three other people.
Yes.
Whether they're getting it free or paid or whatever, so that you can make sure that you can achieve your goal. And now if each person is going to pass that on to three other people, then you don't need to reach a million people. You only need to reach 333,000 people.
Uh-huh.
And In fact, if each of those three then pass it on to three more who do the same and who do the same and who do the same, I at one point had done the math, and I think it's something like 148 people that you need to reach
right.
to get a million people relatively quickly, something under 6 months or something like that. So now you set yourself up in a way that you can pretty much guarantee you're going to reach your goal easily.
Yeah, I even thought of packaging the book as far as, in threes or in multiple packs so that you would automatically have, because they're very small books anyway, so that you'd automatically have a bunch to pass around. And with that, it's said right inside the book to pass it along. So.
Mm-hmm. I think it's a good idea. And mm-hmm. I would, whatever the right number is, pass it to three people, pass it to five people. You want to research what number is the right number for your book, but build the whole campaign around that so that it can become a part of the story, too. Because the neat part about social entrepreneurship, and this is a reason I think you enjoy it so much, is because stories are even more powerful when you're talking about social entrepreneurship. Why does Tom's Shoes give shoes away? Is probably a question that half of America who has seen the commercial is asking. And I am sure that there is a story behind why Tom's Shoes gives away shoes. Do I know what the story is? No, I could probably go online and look it up. But it's something that I think everyone has a curiosity factor around. So if you only make your book available in packages of three, it's going to cause people to want to know the story behind that. Why only in three?
Mm-hmm.
And that curiosity effect can actually bring that many more people to your doorstep in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
So the process that you go through to build a business that's social entrepreneurial versus a business that is simply for profit is identical. These are all the same kinds of questions you'd be asking yourself even if it wasn't a business that makes a difference. You don't need to do anything different because you're doing something that makes a difference. You simply need to make sure that you're following the strategic process through so that you can take all of those end results that you want to achieve and put them together into this business plan. You want to make sure that even more in social entrepreneurial businesses than in any other, that you're using stories, especially stories about how you're making a difference, that can help bring the curiosity effect in to get more people to want what you're selling.
Uh-huh.
So it's not that you have to do something different. It's just even more important than ever that you really follow through with all of the things you should have been doing in your business to start with.
Yeah, absolutely, and it's just great because you just add the additional margin in to be able to, to help your cause have that story, and that story is important. Of course, there is a page on Tom's Shoes, and it looks like they even have a video that talks about the movement, and so it's that becomes part of, in a way, it creates its own mythology, its own really powerful story. And that is also what gets shared as well as the message. So then it becomes not only the Let's Buy Shoes piece, but why are we, what is this thing about giving shoes? How did it get started? Wanting to know what that is and then sharing it. And when someone says, wow, those are really cute shoes, where did you get them? It's more than just saying some shoe store down the street, but it's like, oh, it's this place and they give a pair of shoes every time somebody buys from them.
There was a T-shirt company years ago that was really kind of neat, too. It was a T-shirt company whose T-shirts were made by people, I think it was either Colombia or Ecuador or somewhere in Central America where there are very few jobs and very few jobs that pay anything at all. And they were all handmade by people who were out of work who would make a T-shirt in order to get fed for a month. And one T-shirt got them fed for a month. Well, the T-shirts were kind of unique. And I'm trying to remember the name of that company, too. It was about 10 or 12 years ago, and I just can't remember the name of it. because the T-shirts were unique, they always generated people asking questions. Wow, that's a cool T-shirt. Where'd you get that T-shirt? That kind of thing. And when people would get their T-shirt, the story of how the T-shirt was made would be printed on a little something that looked like parchment paper that would be packaged with the T-shirt so that they would know the story. And it caused so many more people to go and want to buy these T-shirts. And in the area that I lived in back then, almost everybody had at least one of these T-shirts, if not more. And so that meant that there were even more people out there being fed for a month because there were even more T-shirts being sold. Again, you can do it one way that makes you money only, or you can do it another way and make money and make a difference. But they ended up selling more T-shirts because of it. And I don't think I can think of any examples that were both for-profit and making a difference where the for-profit part didn't get bigger because they were making a difference. Can you think of anything like that? I don't think I can think of one.
No?
Every single example I can come up with, the business got bigger because they were making a difference.
Yeah, and I think that I see so many things where you hear or read about charities that failed and all, and they're good causes and they're good people with good hearts doing good work and, you know, whatever, but it just seems to me that the old charity model is just something
it
that we have to die out in favor of this model.
Yeah.
Because
and
they don't fail.
Especially a year like this one, most charities, there was a Nielsen study that was done in June that said that most charities here in America have seen better than an 85% decrease in donations this year. And it's because our economy is so bad. If all of those charitable organizations had been set up as for-profit businesses that simultaneously made a difference so that they didn't have to rely solely on donations, they could make money from a true exchange of value instead, I guarantee you that they would not be down by 85% today.
Exactly. And, you know, what if every entrepreneur, every business in America were teaming up with a cause that was near and dear to their heart and building that into their profit funnel and into the way that they do business, the charities would be funded, the businesses would thrive, because if you're already going to buy shoes or pecan pie or a T-shirt or whatever it is, you're going to buy that stuff anyway, and as you do that, it supports a charitable cause, you know, then to me, then everything would be funded. There would be more abundance and prosperity, and not so much of this trying to grab after the few dollars that so-and-so gives in their foundation grant or that the government grants for this, that, and the other thing.
Yes, absolutely.
I think I found your T-shirt place.
Did you?
It's T-shirts made by orphans in Africa or something like that, I believe.
I think you're right.
And it's called IamANicePerson.com. Like,
really?
I'm a nice person without the apostrophe. IamANicePerson.com. IamANicePerson.com.
Wow.
If that's what you're talking about,
I'm pretty sure they're really cool-looking T-shirts.
I haven't seen the T-shirts, but I found, like, I wrote T-shirts that feed for a month, and that's what came up. They don't show very many designs on their front page, so.
Well, I mean, there's probably tons of them out there if we really look for them.
Yeah.
It's an easy way of going about setting up a for-profit business that also makes a difference.
Right.
And, you know, even our kids today are really interested in doing something for other people. I have a friend of mine who had a daughter two or three years ago who was celebrating her sweet 16th birthday. And that same week that she was turning sweet 16, three of her best friends were also turning sweet 16. Well, these four girls decided that although traditionally your 16th birthday is when you really get, you know, bigger presents than normal, these girls didn't want that. To celebrate their birthday, they wanted to make a difference for somebody else. So all of them went and asked their parents, what can we do to celebrate our birthday by making a difference for somebody? And their parents were like, I don't know, come up with something you want to do. So the girls went and researched it, and they learned that for 25 cents, they could buy a mosquito net for a single person in Africa, where mosquitoes are a really big issue.
Oh, wow.
And these mosquito nets could actually save lives, exactly. So the girls went to all of their friends and their family, and they said, look, for my sweet 16, I don't want presents. I want money that I can use however I want it. And their parents were thinking, oh, they're going to buy clothes or shoes or a car or something. But they went along with it. Well, these girls then went, and they didn't want to rely just on their presents, because what if nobody gave them anything? So they jointly wrote a book, and they got one of their dads to help them put it online, and they self-published it. I think they used Lulu, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, my cow.
And
cool.
So from a website, they sold books. And 100% of the profits got put into this pool. Plus, they collected all of their presents, and all of those got added to the pool. Within 30 days of their sweet 16, these girls bought over 50,000 mosquito nets.
Wow.
Now, that was huge. So literally, they saved 50,000 lives.
They did, and if they had also that tied into a business that was, you know, an ongoing business, how powerful, too, because it could keep on going.
And the girls had asked their teachers what could they do, and their teachers didn't tell them anything. And when they came up with the idea of writing this book, even then, teachers were like, oh, good, have fun. Didn't do anything to encourage them to put it into a business or anything.
Oh, heck, if I'd known about it, I would have been all over trying to help them get the book written in a way that would grow something. Absolutely, you know, but, yeah.
But
see, cool.
In our school system today, we don't have teachers who are entrepreneurial. We don't have teachers who think about social entrepreneurship. And where are the kids ever going to learn about this stuff? There's a fairly new organization that puts out a competition every April for people who are age 16 to 21 that's an entrepreneurial competition. And I think they got started about 5 or 6 years ago with a very small group of kids, a couple hundred of them. And this last year, they have over 5 million students participating in this entrepreneurial competition. And that really says a lot about our kids today. They're no longer looking for 9-to-5 jobs. They now are really considering entrepreneurship as a career move. And I think as we continue to grow as a society, we will certainly start seeing that expand further so that they're not just looking at entrepreneurship as a career move, but they're really looking at social entrepreneurship as a career move. The day we get to that point that that's actually happening with our kids is the day we can solve all the world's problems.
I completely agree. I mean, this really is the solution because it makes everybody profitable and giving or charitable at the same time, and it's really powerful. And back when I was in high school, I knew had nobody around me at all who taught anything remotely entrepreneurial. It was just the go to college, get a job type of stuff. And when you're a blind person, especially back before there was as much technology, it was not really easy for someone to want to hire you because they'd kind of stand at their desk with their eyes closed and go, oh, I couldn't cope, then this person can't do it. So there are just so many reasons why entrepreneurship can be a fantastic choice for people. And when you combine the social in there, I just think of, gosh, if even 10% of all businesses in the world were social entrepreneurship-based business.
It would be huge.
Just 10% of the businesses. Just that would be so incredibly powerful.
It really would. So how can we cause that to happen, Rhonda?
Hmm. Well, I think that's definitely a group project. But I think shows like this are certainly a good start to get that idea across. And I think really teaching a model that benefits a charitable cause as well as growing your business and getting people to understand the power of that, through teachings, and whether that's shows like this, videos, different areas like that, having the business training in place for people in the way that you have, for example, that's a really good way to get that idea into people's minds. And it's like people think of the charity as this separate thing, as the place you write a check to every month, instead of the thing that happens as a course of you doing your business every day. And that is a paradigm shift. It's a mindset shift.
Yes, it really is. And I like your idea. That sounds like a group project. You're right, it is a group project, I think.
Yes, definitely a group project. Yeah.
It's not something that one person can achieve, that's for sure.
Right.
But hey, just because one person can't achieve it shouldn't mean that it doesn't get done. I'll have to put my thinking cap on about that.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, we don't even need to think about how we do this in a way that is so huge. You don't have to try to solve poverty or to try to fix the potable drinking water issue. You can start just by looking at very small things at a local level. How can you set up your business in a way that uses the power of the internet but gets the business back in the hands of the local business people in your town? Even that's a start, right?
Absolutely. Anything is a start. And, you know, and people can pick the cause that's nearest and dearest to their heart. You know, for Ben Mack, it's potable water. I'm not certainly opposed to that, but to pick something, because we can't get so diffuse into 100 different causes. But if you just pick one thing that is really important to you and can run with that, and in between everybody, there will be a number of people working in these different arenas that are truly big, important issues in their communities.
Yes. And if you can just start there with your business, you will make a lot more money in the end. And yet you're not trying to bite off so much that it becomes overwhelming. I guess that's a good way to say it.
Right.
So bite off as much of the apple as you can chew, and don't try and stuff the whole thing in your face at one time. You know, find a way to have some small thing that your business can do to make a difference, while at the same time making you money. That I think is the biggest place to start. Even look at hairdressing businesses. You know, you want to open a beauty shop. Well, make sure that you're setting up the beauty shop so that all of the hair that you cut gets sent to those organizations that make wigs for people with cancer, or that the hair that you cut gets sent to some place that it can make a difference for somebody else. That's, you know, a very small little example, but it's something that's achievable for anybody.
Right.
Now, if you're really doing things that are social entrepreneurial, then how can someone who uses the internet for their business, they don't have an offline brick and mortar component to it, somebody who just has an online presence, how can they make a difference?
Well, you know, I really think the principle is the same whether you're online or offline. So maybe you're not sending 12-inch clippings of hair to whatever that organization is called, but but online it can be through strategic partnerships that you could do it. Working together on a project, it could certainly be having a particular product or whatever where they're portion of the proceeds are going to an organization, but then getting that organization involved as a distribution mechanism.
Yes. Great ideas, Rhonda. Really great ideas. And again, it doesn't have to be anything huge. It can be something small. So look at the niche you're in and find a way to tie that to what it is you're going to do to make a difference. So there's a nonprofit organization called the Art Miles Project, and I'm pretty sure it's theartmilesproject.com. They help children in third world countries learn to use art to make a difference in their life. And next year, on the International Day of Peace, they have 10,000 kids from around the world who are creating these 4-foot by 5-foot banners that will be used to wrap the Great Pyramid for the International Day of Peace. It should be an awesome, awesome thing, right?
Sweet.
Well,
yes.
Let's say you've got an online business in the some sort of craft niche. Well, even being able to take your business and say that 5% of your proceeds go to fund students' travel for the Art Miles Project next year can make a difference at the same time. Maybe you could even take some of those students under your wing and use this to help get the supplies that they need into the hands of those kids that are participating in it.
Mm-hmm.
Through joint ventures, because that would be a kind of a joint venture, right?
It is. Yeah, this whole idea really is based on joint venturing. But with the art thing, yeah, if you had 5 kids and made a deal out of it with videos and different things, use those as a case study for how they're using your craft supplies in changing lives.
Good idea. Yeah, really good idea.
And then those are the kids in the Art Miles Project.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, you can't help all of them. There's too many of them. But find out what the hell it's done.
Right.
We got about 15 minutes left. What else do you want to talk about with social entrepreneurship today? What else do you really want to know?
Oh, wow. I think maybe it would be worthy to go into a little bit deeper on this, how this all can happen through joint ventures, because that is the most powerful way to leverage. And although a lot of things have been kind of talking about it, because when you're pairing up with a charity, that in itself is already a joint venture. I'm doing something with 10 million clicks, that becomes a joint venture. But just thinking of and talking about how folks can really step it up and maybe bringing in somebody that can help with the distribution or whatever, I think that would be a good line for folks to think, because it's just such a different shift of mindset for most people that just having that openness to the new idea, this would help them out.
Well, it's funny that you asked that particular topic. Let me give you a really good example. A couple of years ago, when I first brought out Secrets of the JV Queen, which is my course on how to use joint ventures in your business, the first 10 people that purchased that course got one-on-one strategy sessions with me to help plan their joint ventures. And I think it was probably the fourth or fifth person that purchased it was a woman from Queens, New York. And we get on the phone, and I'm trying to talk to her about the kinds of joint ventures she's interested in doing. And it turned out that this woman was in network marketing, and she had bought the course as a way of creating leads. And it was so upset when I said, well, that's not going to work. And when she said, well, why isn't that going to work? I said, well, because you can't really track affiliate commissions using a network marketing company. They don't have that kind of capability.
Right.
So she kept trying to reposition it to find a way to be able to use joint ventures in her business. And it was very frustrating for her. It took her about 4 months to come up with an idea that joint ventures would actually work for. So here's what she had decided. She wasn't really interested in just putting up an internet marketing business. She really liked network marketing, and it worked for her. But she had to do something else if this was ever going to be something she could use joint ventures to get leverage for. Well, it turned out that she was also a volunteer for a homeless shelter. And this was a specific homeless shelter for moms and their kids in Queens, New York. So she went out and she put together a joint venture. She went to a bus company and asked the bus company if they could donate buses for 500 kids to go to a few places in New York. Of course, the bus company was thrilled about that idea. So they make the arrangements to go in. And what she wants to do is have the bus company come and pick up 500 homeless kids, take these kids first to a beauty shop or barber shop where they could get a mini makeover that morning, then pick them up and take them to a department store where they'd each get a new outfit, and then take them out to some gourmet restaurant in Queens for lunch. Now, she knew that if she was going to do that, she'd need to have a way that it could be done at a time where there was still visibility from the press, but that it wasn't interfering with existing sidewalks and whatnot. So she managed to get all of these different companies to put this together with her. And she sent one press release out to the local media. Every single TV station, every single radio station, all three newspapers and two magazines picked up the story just because it was so unique. And it was helping all these kids. And she called it the Queens JV Project. And she was kind of taking a play on the idea that the JV Queen helped her come in and put this together and the fact that it was from Queens, New York.
Right.
Well, the exposure that she got sent people back to her main website. And on her main website, she had all the stuff about her network marketing business. It didn't talk about the homeless stuff. It was just about the network marketing business. And she put a note up on the website that if you wanted to JV with her, that, you know, you could contact her here. The businesses got so much exposure from this. The restaurants were booked for 90 straight days. The beauty shops and barber shops that were a part of this had no appointments for the next 2 months. The department store was running out of stuff because they had so much extra business, they had to almost double their staff. And by the end of doing this once, she had over 500 businesses come to her asking her if she could do this again and allow them to give stuff to the kids just because it was so tremendously successful. And she really didn't have to work hard to do it. She just went to a few local businesses and set it up. And then wrote one press release, and I don't think she even wrote it. I think she bought it. And that was it. But boy, talk about a great way to use social entrepreneurship and joint ventures together. And in the end, her network marketing business completely took off.
No doubt. Because even if you had 1% of all of the traffic that went there who decided to join, even for a short amount of time, that would definitely explode her business.
She had hundreds of thousands of visitors that month. Hundreds of thousands of visitors. That's a big deal. She certainly didn't get anywhere near that kind of traffic before that had happened. She had a couple hundred visitors. That was it. So it's not hard to come up with ways to use joint ventures to build something that is socially entrepreneurial. You just have to think a little bit more outside the box.
Oh, absolutely.
And it does usually involve doing something offline. It doesn't have to. The other example we gave about the Art Miles project could also work. Again, you need to be strategic. You need to be asking yourself, what is it that you're trying to achieve? What is your goal with this? So for her, it was, how does she grow her network marketing business? And at the same time, how can she also help these homeless children? And if she started with that, it wasn't too terribly difficult to work her way backwards to figure out what the whole plan looked like. For the businesses that were that already had websites that were part of this JV, she could get them linking back to her website too, and she could do the same for them. So it could easily become something even bigger down the road.
Yeah, and it's something that's repeatable, or at least take that model, not only bring it to different cities is one way to do it, but, you know, just kind of swapping out some of the pieces of accomplishing something similar, where you have local businesses making a difference in the lives of of kids or homeless people or whatever it is, and using the same model.
She did it with homeless kids. Could you do it maybe with vets? You know, whether it's just veterans generally or disabled veterans, either way. There's a company in Texas. I don't know if I can remember the name. Try looking at VIP Sports or VIP Sports Coach, maybe, out of Dallas. Here's what they do. It's kind of a neat thing. They have a whole bunch of Prevo buses that are motorhomes. They're gorgeous. People come and go to sporting events in Dallas, whether it's Dallas Cowboys, their basketball team, their hockey team. I don't think they have a baseball team, but maybe they do. Any of the sporting events, NASCAR, whatever. And when they buy this package, they get to go in the RV to the event. They do some tailgating and partying before and after. They have a joint venture with the Ritz-Carlton Hotel, so the night of the event, they all stay at a Ritz-Carlton. They get meals provided. They get alcohol provided. It's a really fun time. It's like $500 a ticket. And it's used a lot by corporations who are trying to entertain guests. It's also used just by folks that want to go party for a while at a sporting event. Well, they're also doing something through a joint venture with the military. And twice a year, they're going to be sponsoring an event that is just for disabled veterans. And for those disabled vets, it's going to be completely free. They needed to come up with a way because there are obviously very real costs involved with the trip. The food is a very real cost. The tickets are a very real cost. The fuel is a very real cost, and so on. Even the Ritz is not free. It's something they pay for. So what they've done is they've set it up so that every person who buys a ticket can contribute a very small sum, it's like $20 to $50, to a fund that would allow them to be able to take these two trips a year for the vets. So if someone contributes an extra $50 when they buy their ticket, they then get a half-price ticket on their next trip. Now, that half-price ticket still gives them profit after covering all of their expenses. But what they've basically done is set up a type of a scholarship. And that has been working really well. In fact, it's been working so well, it looks like they'll be able to add a third trip each year just for disabled vets. So, again, a for-profit business, how do you make a difference kind of cause? And just look at what you're trying to achieve to figure out what that should look like.
Yeah. And there's, you know, we don't have to think only offline or only online. There's no reason that it can't be both. I mean, for example, I live in the Branson area. We have tons of stuff. Branson is wonderful about honoring the veterans, and the Veterans Museum is here. And so, you know, a lot of what I do is online, but that's not to say that all of it is or that all of it has to be. So I could easily come up with something about veterans sharing their stories and tie into different local businesses and probably get national exposure because there's so much that happens here for veterans all the time.
Well, then that's the thing. Because of these two events that they do, they can go out and get press exposure, and that helps them sell even more tickets. We've only got about 60 seconds left. So this is the exact topic that we talk about in all of the coaching programs at Directions U. Our bachelor's program is all about how do you set up a business that both makes a difference and makes you money. It's probably the best way of getting started quickly, and you can do so at askggg.com/bachelors. askggg.com/bachelors. It's a one-year-long program that will walk you through every step of getting that business set up, getting it out there, and really using it to make a difference. Thanks so much, Rhonda, for coming up with this topic today. You know, it's always one that I love talking about. I really appreciate that. And next week, we've got an awesome show. Adam Urbanski is going to be here. I can't wait.
I know.
So, I hope you'll join us next week on Tuesday at noon Eastern with Adam Urbanski when we are back here on Relationship Marketing 101. Thanks so much, Rhonda, and have a great time at JV Alert. Say hello to everybody for me.
I will. Thank you. Have a great time.
And I'll see you next Tuesday at noon Eastern here on Blog Talk Radio. Take care.